It's time now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker today is Mr. John Matthews, Chief Financial Officer of BJU. The title of his message is Dealing with Opposition in the Work of God. The text is from Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15 and 16.
Well, today, I'm your chapel speaker. For those that do not know me, my name's John Matthews. Be starting my 16th year at the university. My wife teaches at the elementary school in physical education, and my responsibilities here are to oversee the school's finances. And that's been a humbling task, but an exciting task to see how the Lord works on behalf of the university here. Well, let's jump into this right away. I'd like to read Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15 and 16. I'm very aware there are many more people before me qualified to teach on this passage, but from just the layman's point of view, let me excite you with what the Lord has shown me and see if the Lord can give you something to take with you to help you in your Christian life. Nehemiah 6, verse 15 and 16. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, in 52 days, and it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. I was on vacation about a month ago, and these two verses just jumped out at me. I want to kind of say verse 15 and 16 in another way. So the wall was finished in 52 days, and when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. Three most extraordinary things are taking place. One, and most clear, the wall was finished in 52 days. Secondly, the Lord actually got the credit. Says there in verse 16, they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. And number three, the enemies and surrounding nations fell greatly in their own esteem. It said in verse 16, our enemies hearing and all the heathen that were about us seeing these things were very much cast down in their own eyes. Now, why is this so extraordinary? Well, we live in a day when folks spend more time figuring how not to work then they spend time actually doing work. And there was something extraordinarily accomplished. The walls were rebuilt in 52 days. Men and women today live as if life is all about them. Do we not live in a society where people seek attention for themselves? They seek and steal credit all the time, and no acknowledgement or little acknowledgement is given to God. And three, we live in a society where men and women today have such a high esteem of themselves. Such self-dependency, self-made women, self-made men, pride in their lives that they see no need for God. And yet, in this passage, much work has taken place. Something extraordinary was accomplished. The wall was rebuilt in 52 days. The Lord got the credit, and people's high esteem of themselves fell greatly. Now, in my Bible study, this is when I began to get a little excited and say, I want to study and meditate a little bit more about what is going on here to get these type of results. Let's look at what we know about the people working with Nehemiah who had a great part in this extraordinary accomplishment. We know from the earlier chapters in Nehemiah that Nehemiah had come back and simply given his testimony of how he was there. They had heard Nehemiah's testimony, how God had led in the king's heart to let him return and rebuild the walls. And I want to read from chapter 2 and verse 18 where we see this. This is Nehemiah speaking. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And the people's response, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. You know the story. Nehemiah was seen of sad countenance before the king. And the king questioned him. And Nehemiah said, well, why wouldn't I be sad when my people, the Jews there in Jerusalem, are totally vulnerable as their walls are not up. They're defenseless and they're being oppressed. And the king said, well, make thy request. And he with boldness made a request that he may return and help rebuild those walls. And the king said, go, and I'll even give you of my wealth to assist you. This is the testimony Nehemiah could tell those folks. And they got passionate. They saw right away this was a good work. And they said, let us rise up and build. Nehemiah, in chapter 6, verse 3, he called it a great work. So there's something more that I want you to see beyond it's a great work. I want you to see the people's mind to work. In chapter 4, verse 6, it simply says, so we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. So I see two things coming together. The realization that they're a part of something special, that it is a great work. It's a good work. And I see something else. They have a mind to be a part of the work and to give wholeheartedly to the work. So I kind of wrote down when I was doing my Bible study this thought. We as servants of God, when we can get convinced in the good and great opportunities before us, and we have a mind to work and to depend on God, that with God's blessing, the results can be extraordinary and the Lord can get the credit. And people will take note and experience the fear of God and see their need to be dependent on God. Now, this is where I get excited. There's wonderful ministry incentive here to know that there are great opportunities in my life, in your life, that God wants us to be convinced that those opportunities are for us. And He wants us to depend on Him and have a mind to work. And with God's blessing, we can be a part of something extraordinary as an extraordinary God works in us and through us and gets the credit as we seek to give Him glory and honor. The great opportunities where we need a mind to work. It may be some family member. It could be some co-worker. It could be a neighbor. It could be a giving opportunity, a new job opportunity, some ministry volunteer opportunity. That could be your good and great work, that if you just have a mind to work and depend on God, you can be a part of something extraordinary that God wants to do. Now, what does this passage seem to teach us in how we can be convinced where the Lord may be touching our heart and drawing our attention to be a part of something extraordinary? I think as I studied this, what the Lord showed me was opposition, and not just one time opposition, but repeated opposition is clearly seen in the passage against the people's mind to work in the great opportunity of rebuilding the walls. So while opposition can be used as a way to stop you in a great work, opposition also can be positively the thing that can convince you you are doing the good and great work God wants for you. So stay in the game and keep your mind to work. And with God's blessing, you can be a part of something extraordinary. I think the forms of opposition to these wall builders are common in our lives, too. What I want to do is read the introduction of the opposition and show you opposition number one. Let's read chapter 6 in Nehemiah, verses 1 to 4. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of all our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at the time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, here comes opposition number one. Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I'm doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. I want to call this first opposition the opposition of distraction. You see it plainly. he's tempted to come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. I'm told Billy Sunday had a wonderful sermon about Ono in the plains of Ono. The idea it's easy to get distracted and led away. In ministry today, there is a lot of pressure to have dialogue with those going other directions in ministry. If you haven't faced it yet in your ministry, you will. As fundamentalists, we have fought for so many years, and so many times the other side seems to be enjoying the fruits of success. And we just want to be liked and accepted. That we start taking our focus off our calling and direction, and we start having some dialogue. Beware, you may end up liking them, and then what? Been told this was one of the primary reasons Dr. Bob Jr. was so protective that the school and he himself would not get into dialogue with others. It was because of this fear of distraction, and even more so, what if he ended up liking the folks he was having dialogue with? It would be that much harder to pull away. Some fundamentalists today are tired of being considered intellectually backward to the modernists and new evangelicals and are caving in and compromising to be accepted so they can have educational standing. This has long been common in higher education, and I know I'm sitting before professors who know this even better than I do. But I'm reminded of the first president of Princeton College. His very first address to the student body was a message with these three main points. Point number one, cursed be any teaching that denies the cross. Point number two, cursed be any teaching that doesn't coincide with the cross. And point number three, cursed be any teaching that isn't subservient to the cross. I don't think there could be any clearer three points to show you how Princeton began very conservative, extremely fundamental and biblically correct, as was Harvard and so many of the other elite schools there, higher institutions of education. But what happened? They got distracted from their calling and direction they once were so convinced in. They wanted educational standing. They wanted acceptance. They wanted to be liked. They got their mind off their great work and the God who called them to that great work. And they lost their mind to work in that great work. And being distracted, they slid away from their founding principles. In our Christian lives, we need to stay true to the biblical principles that God has convinced us of and not slip away out of distraction. I was thinking of the verse, 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. I love Nehemiah's response to their opposition of distraction. Look with me again what he said in verse 3 of Nehemiah chapter 6. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Do you see how zealously affected he is in what he was called to do? He couldn't take time to be distracted. He was so excited about what he was doing. It was a great work. It was a good work. It was the work God had given him and those people. He was not going to be distracted and slip away from the task at hand. He was allowing himself and the people were allowing themselves to be a part of something special. Now, I have a BlackBerry that many times I use while I'm driving. I'm the first to admit I probably shouldn't. My wife tells me often, she says, John, don't you know what the speed limit is when you use your BlackBerry? She says, it's zero. Stop it. Because many times when she's sitting over there, she doesn't like kind of my seemingly not totally aware of what's going on. And truthfully, with my BlackBerry, sometimes after doing about 10 emails on it, I all of a sudden realize I don't remember from about 10 minutes ago how I got to where I am on the highway right now. I don't remember any cars I passed, exits I passed, and it kind of gives you this sick feeling in your stomach. There could have been a cop sitting off the side. Maybe if I didn't have my cruise on, I got a little heavy on the gas, or Maybe someone could have stopped right up ahead, but truthfully, in those 10 miles, I can miss a lot. Life is this way. The world is full of distractions. Many distractions are carnal and earthly. I'm reminded of Demas, 2 Timothy 4:10. Paul said, "Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world." But I'm also mindful in Christians, it isn't always the carnal and earthly things that distract us. It can be, as it were, good things, even as that BlackBerry in and of itself isn't inherently wrong. But when I'm focused and distracted and using it, there's a lot that I miss. And let's remember, in the distractions, we can be missing a lot. And who is to say that it isn't that opposition of distraction that is keeping you, that is keeping me, from the opportunity to make an extraordinary difference in a life, in a relationship, in some ministry, but because we are distracted, we're missing it. I want to move on to opposition number two. Let's read Nehemiah 6, verses 5 to 8. "Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, 'It is reported among the heathen, and Gashmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words. And thou hast also appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, There is a king in Judah. And now shall it be reported to the king according to these words, Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. Then I sent unto him, saying, There are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thy own heart.'" You see what they're doing here? They're putting lies about what Nehemiah is really doing. They're saying, "You just want to be king. You're sending out prophets to proclaim you're going to be king, and you're building these walls so you'll have your little defended castle, an area of power." You see the opposition of discouragement that can come through something like that? In this case, the discouragement is coming in the form of lies against Nehemiah as they try to weaken him and turn him aside. But the work was too great, and his mind and the people's mind was too steadfast that they would not stop the work. I'm reminded of something my grandmother used to share often about my grandfather. She said there was a verse that he leaned on heavily many times. It's Proverbs 28:1. "The wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion." You see, there were many times in the early days of the school that there were lies about the school. My grandmother said, she used to say, how could he stand under the pressure? And he would always say this verse, "We have nothing to run from. We are doing a good and great work." We were convinced in the early days it was the right work. They were not going to be turned aside. They were not going to be discouraged. And you know what? Something extraordinary took place. Bob Jones University is a miracle. And these people with a mind to work and understanding of a great work saw this miracle, this extraordinary growth of Bob Jones University in the extension of its reach and influence, where the Lord actually gets the credit. They were part of it because they did not let discouragement, lies, turn them aside. Proverbs 24:10 says, "If thou faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is what? It's small." I've heard our pastor say it this way. If we faint in the day of narrowness, our strength is narrow. Now, he describes it this way. God brings or allows adversity in our lives, discouragement, to box us in, to make things very narrow around us. But he does that because he wants us. He wants us to see him. God doesn't want the discouragement and the adversity to turn us aside, to get us off track, but rather to turn us to him and to let him work in us and through us. Some of our greatest ministry opportunities can come at times when the opposition of discouragement is against us. But many times we don't see the great ministry opportunities as discouragement has left us in self-pity, in self-focus, and we run away from life and we hide out. Now, if you think with me, you can think of a character in the Old Testament who kind of presents this to us of being discouraged and hiding out. I'm thinking of Elijah. It's interesting, he hid out after his great showdown with the prophets of Baal there on Mount Carmel, where something extraordinary took place that day. If you don't think 450 prophets of Baal being defeated when God's people saw fire come down from heaven and consume those sacrifices wasn't something to be excited about and wasn't a great work, then you're missing what that story is all about. But after that showdown, what do we see? Elijah's fleeing and he's hiding and he's wallowing in self-pity and in self-focus. And this can be true of us. Are we hiding out in self-pity and focus? And are we missing ministry opportunity before us? It's so interesting, again, where he is missing out on ministry opportunity. It's coming right on the heels of something great that happened, that showdown with the prophets of Baal there on Mount Carmel. It simply says to us that it can come at any time. You can be convinced in a great work. You can have a mind to work and you can be a part of extraordinary results. But the Christian life isn't a life lived in the past. The Christian life cannot be a life of neutrality. I've heard one friend say the Christian life can't be neutral. You're either going forward or you're going backward. And I agree with that. You can't rest on what you've done in the past. You need to each and every day say, what is the new great work the Lord has before me? He wants me convinced in. And you can make a willful choice to be convinced in that work. And you need to let God work in you and through you to see extraordinary results. Lastly, I want to look at the opposition of what I call defeat. Look at chapter 6, verses 10 to 13. Afterward, I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, the son of Mehetabel. And I apologize if I'm doing those injustice. That's the best I can do. Who was shut up. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple. And let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there that being as I am would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. And lo, I perceived that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me. For Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Therefore was he hired that I should be afraid and do so and sin, and that they might have matter for an evil report, that they might reproach me. They're trying to get Nehemiah to hide out in what I can understand was, I guess, the Holy of Holies. They give him this fear that they're trying to slay him. And he says, I'm not the high priest. I don't have the right to go in there. I'm not going in there. But it's interesting, he was able, through the Lord helping him perceive, to see what their tactic was. If they could get him to go in the Holy of Holies, even though he may be doing it out of fear to hide, it would be a sin which would give them an occasion against him, and he would be a reproach. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. The devil wants to trip us up. Our flesh wants to trip us up. And tripping us up slows us down. And I heard the illustration of the Tour de France yesterday, and that made me think I wanted to use one too today. In the Tour de France, when a rider gets tripped up, the idea he falls on his bike, he gets thrown way behind. And many times he can be out of the race for good if they're really hurt. There's illustration given yesterday where perennial stars like Jan Ulrich and Basso were out for doping on the eve of the prologue, which is the first stage of the Tour de France. Tripped up, out for good. Couldn't even compete, and they were hopefuls to have a legitimate chance to win. In the race so far, bike crashes have put riders out because it was so bad and they were hurt so terribly. Other crashes have caused riders to finish precious minutes behind the peloton. It takes a long time to make up that lost ground when tripped up in the Tour de France. And so it is too in our life when we are seeking to have ministry with others. The devil and our enemies are looking for an opportunity to find occasion against us and our God. When David sinned with Bathsheba, Nathan the prophet said in 2 Samuel 12:14, "By this deed, David, thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme." 1 Timothy 5:14 says, "Give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully." If occasion can be found against us, then our ministry opportunity may be put on hold. Our witness compromised, and anything we say just falls on deaf ears. We, as Daniel, must be found with no fault. I love it. They tried to get Daniel. And everywhere they looked and tried to uncover something, he was without fault. The work is too great. The opportunities abound for us where we need a mind to work. And we must avoid the opposition of defeat, lest we not be able to be a part of the extraordinary results that God wants you and I to be a part of. I conclude with these simple thoughts. We've looked at three oppositions: the opposition of distraction, the opposition of discouragement, the opposition of defeat. Now, these aren't the only oppositions you and I can find in life, but they are ones that, to me, were shown in the passage. And they represent ways we can lose our focus for the great work God has for us. They show us ways we can lose our mind to work. They show us ways we can lose our opportunities before us to have ministry by giving occasion for others to speak reproachfully. Simply want to close with this thought. Has God pinpointed through one of these oppositions something you're experiencing now, and He's convicting you not to fall under that opposition and leave the great work opportunity and lose your mind to work? But today, could you take the positive, and through the opposition that you may be facing, that I may be facing, through that opposition, can we not be convinced we are in the great work God has for us? And we're going to keep our mind to work, and an extraordinary God can work through ordinary people like us to do extraordinary things if we stay out of the way, keep our faith in Him, and let Him work unhindered.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Mr. John Matthews, Chief Financial Officer of BJU. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. Today's message is also available on the internet at WMUU.com. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.